Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Play the music, Ben. Yes. Play the music. Football Friday. Welcome in. Payne and Pendergast with you till 10 a.m. this morning. Great to be with you. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne, and he's chomping at the bit. What's up, dude? How you doing?
I thought this was the Mariners squander a three-run lead music.
No. Friday Football Friday. We start with football on a Football Friday. Don't worry, we'll get to them. We will get to the Rangers doing the Astros a favor last night. That was cool. How you doing, man?
I'm good. It's unfortunate that, you know, obviously the Tua Tagovailoa gets obviously a concussion last night. He was in we all know the fencing posture by now, and Tua with his long history of concussions and just injury history in general. A lot of serious debate going on around the league today, probably, that we probably won't partake too much in, but just about the future of Tua as a quarterback.
Yeah.
But I think there's, as far as just on the cold-hearted football side of things, I think I would say a more than 50% chance we don't see Tua Tagovailoa when the Texans play the Vikings.
In week 15, yeah, it's a long season, man. It's a long way off. But and for those who missed it, what Seth's referring to is the Thursday Night Football game last night, the big story. If you woke up and just looked at the score, you said, why are we talking Thursday Night Football? It was a blowout. The Bills, by the way, other than the first quarter and a half of that Arizona game last week, look really good so far this season. For those who missed it, 31-10. The final score, but the big story is Tua Tagovailoa goes down in the third quarter with a concussion, which I was watching the game. I was in an event last night, and once the event was over, it was about halftime of the game, so we turned the game on and we were watching it. And my first reaction, and it's going to sound kind of cold to say this, but that was not smart by Tua. Like, Tua is a guy with concussion history. You're in a three-touchdown game. Like, you're down 31-10. And you're lowering your head to bury it into the chest of the safety. You know, like, Tua's got to know who he is a little bit. He's already well past the first down marker on that scramble. And slide, man. Get your head out of the way of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Am I being mean by saying that?
No, I think it's, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, with tone of voice, I guess, could matter, but it's, yeah, I think that's the reality of it with Tua Tagovailoa, is that he has this long history of concussions and injuries in general, and he spent a lot of time and energy trying to avoid them, and it was contact that he could have avoided.
Yes.
And it was even, you know, it's not always in the middle of the field, it's not so easy to know exactly where the first down line is, you know, without the clear markers or anything, but it shouldn't matter at that point anyway. Like, is your quarter, this is why I get so upset about Will Levis. Well, I don't know why I get upset about it, but if I were a Titans fan, Will Levis takes, it's cool to grit it out and everything, but Will Levis will take hits to get an extra yard when he's 7 yards shy of the first down line, you know, like that kind of stuff. Tua's just got to know that part of them paying them the money that they did was that you got to try to avoid situations like this. Yeah, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, look, this is not stuff to mess around with. I don't think my gut right now is, dude, you don't have to play football ever again. This is just too much of a pattern, and your brain will turn to soup. It's I mean, unless it's like a Sidney Crosby type thing where it takes 3 years for him to really get everything right. It's just he gets them too easily. You can get a concussion from just about anything, but it wasn't like that was a magnificently hard hit that he'll be able to avoid again in his career.
Didn't even look like a concussion hit, really. Like, it was more to kind of the side, like the neck, you know. It looked more like he bent his neck on the play than I know concussions are weird. Like, anything can trigger them.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even have to take a direct blow to the head
to get a
concussion. Just the whiplash effect can cause a concussion.
Right.
So, but no, I think you're right. It just shows that, man, he's prone to concussions.
Yeah.
He's just flat out, there's no flukishness about it whatsoever. He is super prone to concussions.
Yeah, like,
it's not something that gets better with age.
No, and it doesn't. And we can use C.J. Stroud as an example last year. Like, when he got taken down by Quinnen Williams in that Jets game, you go, oh, yeah, he's concussed. Like, his head smacked against that awful MetLife turf, and you know. But that one last night, it wasn't your classic concussion kind of hit, but you're absolutely right. Like, Tua's not. I mean, Tua is susceptible to all, you know, and now I'm watching it. They're showing it over and over and over again on TV. So he, if he was concussed when he buried his helmet into DeMar Hamlin's chest,
yeah,
he went to the ground and probably made it worse because he's going to the ground and the back of his head smacks against the turf. That looked like the back of the head hitting the turf looks like what might have concussed him, you know?
Yeah, that probably was it when he hit the turf there. I think the biggest thing, too, you know, as far as the first down line, too, I mean, we saw this last week. This is what was so weird about it. It's almost like he was going for the first down marker, and he just wanted to kind of try to fall to the turf. But we know, and it's an annoying rule, except this is the reason. When C.J. Stroud dove in the game and people thought it was a bad spot, no, they start – if a quarterback dives – it's like he's starting his slide, and they treat it like a slide because they don't want quarterbacks incentivized to dive forward. Right. So when CJ, it wasn't a bad spot. It was that they mark it the same way they mark a slide. When you start the motion, that's where they spot the ball.
Yeah.
So Tua there, they would have marked the ball, or they should have marked the ball short of the first down marker anyway. So he's doing something that's not even going to help him. Like, he should be sliding there, not getting the first down, and it just doesn't. It was completely and totally needless. I don't want to, like, you know, critique the guy's football decisions right now, but if you're the Dolphins moving forward, like, all right, this is a guy spent 2 years trying to avoid these issues, and he put himself in that situation.
Yeah, to put the timeline together, he didn't have any concussions last season. Right. The two concussions that he had that are documented were in week 4 and week 11 of 2022. And then if you recall, he was done for the season after those concussions, and Skylar Thompson had to start a playoff game for the Dolphins that year. He made it through all of last year without getting concussed. As Seth pointed out, he had worked all offseason between 2022 and 2023 on doing things that would help him fall more properly to avoid concussions. He was trying to literally learn how to fall in football games, and it worked last year. This wasn't a pocket thing. This was a scramble. Like, all the learning how to fall stuff is largely for when you're in the pocket and you're getting dragged down by a defensive lineman.
He put himself in a position where he couldn't roll properly.
Right.
You know, like when you do martial arts and everything, like wrestlers know this too. You learn how to tuck your shoulder, tuck your head, all that stuff. So he learned to do all that. But this was a situation where he's just kind of – I don't want to say he sought out contact, but he went head first into contact, and then everything falls apart after that, and he falls and hits his head.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. It's not it's one of those football situations that he should have just –
it was unnecessary.
Contact by slide, by a feet first slide.
Yeah, totally unnecessary. So we'll see what happens with Tua. As you pointed out, Seth, they're on the schedule for week 15. That's a long time between now and then. But it does go to show you, I thought of two things other than, you know, I hope Tua is okay. Is one, any analysis of the NFL schedule before the season, just 2 weeks into the season, feels so stupid now. You know, like Jordan Love's got an MCL sprain. The Texans play them in week 7. It sounds like he'll be back for that game.
Yeah.
Probably they didn't put him on IR, which would have kept him out for at least 4 weeks. Tua's concussed now.
J.J. McCarthy, you go down the line of various quarterbacks that you would have faced. Not that J.J. McCarthy was, you know, we have no idea how good he was going to be.
Right.
There's no way to know at the beginning of the year.
Right, right. So I thought of that. The other thing I thought of after watching Skylar Thompson for a quarter and a half is, and I know, look, I know Davis Mills isn't Patrick Mahomes or anything like that, or even C.J. Stroud, but you can see why the Texans gave Davis Mills a little, you know, another 1 year extension. Like, Davis Mills is on a different planet than Skylar Thompson's awful. And I've not gone around and looked to see what all the backup quarterback situations are around the NFL. I just know that if I'm a Dolphins fan, you cannot win with that guy. I don't care how much firepower you have. They've got firepower like the Texans do at wide receiver, at least with their top two guys, with Waddle and Hill. And they couldn't do anything with that guy in the game. Mills, I think, at least with this artillery, if he had to come in for a couple of games, I think could move the offense. They couldn't move the football last night.
You know what's weird is the difference. Jimmy Shapiro sends us these odds at times with unique odds and unique prop bets or things like this. And this is just, they have the point differences between if a starter starts the game and a backup starts the game.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of surprised by this one. The Ravens have the biggest difference between Lamar Jackson and Josh Johnson.
Okay. Yeah.
The Texans have the fifth biggest difference, a 5.5-point difference if Davis Mills were to start the game versus C.J. Stroud. And that's fair. I think C.J. Stroud is a different quarterback in this system now than he was last year.
Yeah.
But you go down to it, Miami was actually one of the lowest. And maybe that's a vote for Mike McDaniel, it's only a 3.5-point difference because Skylar Thompson is he's not too especially running this offense.
No, yeah. Some of those, as you know, being the expert gambler that you are these days, is shaped by public perception. You know, like CJ, like that gap between CJ and Davis, it has a lot to do with the actuality. It also has a lot to do with the perception by bettors. CJ's one of the faces of the league. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
My other thought coming out of this Bills game was that, okay, that offense looks a lot like what the offensive coordinator Joe Kelly was trying to do last year as he took
Joe
over
Brady.
Joe Brady, excuse me. Two-thirds of the way through the
Joe
season.
Joe Kelly. That'd be awesome if he were the offensive coordinator of an opposing team.
Joe Kelly would be a good, you know what he'd be good for? Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
Here's how you pretend a bad throw is actually what you intended to do.
It's true.
Say you hated that Texan staffer standing 5 yards deep on the sideline, and you were trying to hit him in the head with that errant throw.
Good save. That was awesome.
Yes. Yeah, I intended to do that all along. So Joe Brady, what he was trying to do last year, the offense, spread it out and, you know, use all your receivers, use your running back in the game. You might see that the Bills running back had 3 touchdowns. Yeah, one of them was a reception. So, and yet at the same time, if Stephon Diggs were there, I think they would they'd be using him really well. But the salary cap and everything, not to mention all the interpersonal stuff, didn't work out. But Stephon Diggs comes to Houston, and the Texans, funny enough, used Stephon Diggs in many ways the same way the Bills were last year.
Yeah, I thought the same
difference,
thing. Yeah.
The difference is that he's got room to run when they throw him the short passes now. I mean, think about what they used Stephon Diggs for. They used him as a runner behind the line of scrimmage. They use him on slants. They used him on short routes. He went deep, too, but the coverage just didn't quite match up. Mm-hmm. But because Stephon Diggs is on an offense that's more diverse and has more weaponry, it's not going to be frustrating. He got 2 touchdown receptions in the game.
Correct.
So it's the beauty of free trade, kids, there.
That's
before
right.
you go off writing your communist manifestos, this is the beauty of free trade, okay? The Bills probably got better for their long term, and the Texans got better in the short term.
People are saying on the text page, Ryan Tannehill about to be a Dolphin again, I would assume. That's a good phone call to make right there if you're the Dolphins. It would be Ryan Tannehill is light years better than Skylar Thompson. That would be a smart thing.
The other thing, too, I think, if Tua comes back hypothetically, whether he should or shouldn't, I think that this is – Tua gets rid of the ball really, really fast on a lot of the RPOs and everything. I thought last night you saw that maybe with a year of film of a healthy Tua that the Bills had picked up on some things.
Yeah.
I mean, Tua could have had 3 interceptions in the first 1.5 quarters of that game.
It was a bad game, yeah.
It was it was ugly in terms of his passing performance.
It was rough. All right, Texans, and we'll get to the Astros a little later, too. The Astros win yesterday 6-3. They're up 4.5 games in the AL West. We'll play that music as well somewhere along the way. But let's get to the Texans and the Bears. Let's start to get ready. It's a Football Friday, the 6-pack. 6 things to look for in Sunday night's game. Bears, Texans. We'll get to that. You can hear the game right here on Sports Radio 610. We'll get to that coming up next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. Couple people asking, what's the difference, the point difference in Vegas? Seth brought up an email that a guy by the name of Jimmy Shapiro sends us, gambling emails with odds and things like that, and he sent one yesterday with what the spread difference is for teams with when they're starting their starting quarterback versus when they have to play their backup quarterback. The biggest ones are Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. There's a 7.5-point difference on the spread with those guys. CJ and Davis Mills are a 5.5-point difference. A couple people asking, what's the difference between Deshaun Watson and Jameis Winston? It should actually be more. Jameis should be the one that yields the better point spread for a team. Deshaun is considered a half a point better than Jameis Winston.
Oh, my gosh.
A half a point better than Jameis right now.
$230 million
guaranteed. $46 million a year for half a point better than Jameis Winston. So
I do remember I tweeted a couple weeks ago. Somebody had thrown some Browns fan idiotically threw some shade at Davis Mills after his extension. And I pointed out how much better Davis Mills' stats are cumulatively over the last two seasons. And somebody said, well, Deshaun has missed games. I'm like, yeah, I know. Some of those were, yeah, we're aware of that. Davis Mills has missed some games, too. He didn't. He was not the starter last year. And he still has thrown for more yards and touchdowns than Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun's only started 13 really bad games for them. It's wild.
That's part of the point, you dumbass
exactly.
Browns fans.
Yeah.
Idiots.
There are now for just to kind of dovetail off of what this texter's asking about Deshaun, there are three current starting quarterbacks or three teams who by the point spread would be better off according to Vegas starting their backups than starting their actual starters. And they're three of our favorites to poke fun at on this show. Will Levis. The Titans would be half a point better off starting Mason Rudolph instead of Will Levis, according to Vegas.
Oh, I could go for that, yeah.
The Giants would be 1 point better off starting Drew Lock instead of Daniel Jones.
100%. They need to make that move, yep.
Carolina Panthers would be a point and a half better off starting Andy Dalton instead of Bryce Young.
Oh, That's shy. I think that's a classic case where a veteran quarterback can overcome some of the issues that they have. Plus, he would be better adapted to if Dave Canales, Dave Canales got that job because he got the best out of Baker Mayfield, along with Mike Evans. But also, I think Dalton would be a better 100%. They would win more games this year if Andy Dalton played.
Yep. All right, let's get into our little six pack here of things to get ready for the Texans and the Bears. Let's start with hey Ben, you got the can ready? Yeah, let's start with number one here. Protect CJ Stroud. And I think this is appropriate. They were coming off of a game last night, although that was more Tua not protecting himself than it was the Dolphins not protecting Tua. But protecting CJ Stroud, and I say that, Seth, a couple of things. One, the pass protection, especially in the first half last week, was very clunky. There was a lot of clutter in the pocket. CJ got sacked three times. A lot of them were on big third down situations, and it got the Colts off of the field. In this particular matchup, Montez Sweat, I kind of poked fun at that pickup at the trade deadline last year because I'm like, what are the Bears doing trading for players instead of picks? They're a rebuilding team. They traded for Montez Sweat, signed him to a big deal this offseason. He's been good for the Bears so far, and he lined up last week over the right tackle. So this is a Titus Howard. If they do that again this week, Titus Howard versus Montez Sweat. Titus got pushed around a little bit last week at times.
Yeah. Titus and Laramie both had some rough snaps. They had some good snaps, too. It just wasn't as – they weren't consistent the way that you pay those guys to be consistent. And I know there's rustiness and all of that, but that all goes back to, all right, if you're a veteran player – who gets the privilege of not having to take all the reps during training camp. And Titus was out there. They managed him a little bit. He didn't play in the preseason games all that much. Part of it is show up ready in week one. And I felt like both... Now, Laramie, I think his knee might be still bothering him a little bit. But it just wasn't as consistent as it needs to be. Mm-hmm. And I thought Titus... There were some things early on where it just looked a little clunky that he cleaned up as the game went on. But this is a big... hopefully that week one was a cup of joe for him, and he's ready to go.
Yeah, of all the things that were going wrong last week in the game, plenty went right. Obviously, they won the game. But pass protection is the one... I'm not super worried about the pass protection ultimately being good for this team in front of CJ Stroud.
Right.
So we'll see if this Sunday if they can build off of what they did in the second half of that game. Number two, I'm just excited about this. I think it's going to be a fun matchup to watch. This is one of the better secondaries that the Texans are going to face this year. They've got good cornerbacks on this team. Jalen Johnson got a big bag this offseason. Tyreek Stevenson, good cornerback, and then Kyler Gordon is their slot guy. Going up against Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, and Tank Dell. This will be a little step up in weight class at cornerback this week.
Yeah, and this is it's interesting. Without just getting too much into the coverages and all of that. And Bobby spoke about that yesterday, but it was not necessarily radio friendly. It's tempting to think, oh, okay, well, the Bears play a lot of cover two anyway, and it'll be a lot of what they showed last, you know, like a lot of what the Texans saw last week. I wouldn't call them like a soft coverage two team. They're very capable of coming up and challenging wide receivers. And I think they're going to, you know, Gus Bradley went and did stuff that was atypical for Gus Bradley, yeah, the defense coordinator for the Colts. They did some things that were atypical, and the Texans kind of had to figure it out as they went. I think that the Bears and Eberflus will play more of their normal defense and expect their guys to come and challenge. So that's where it becomes more of a, this will be fun. This will be some guys with some opportunities downfield if they win their matchups. But there's also, like, this is a ball-hawking secondary,
yeah,
that the Bears have. They're going to make plays on the ball. So it's like this is more of a mano a mano between the receivers and the defensive backs, and it should be fun. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking for a good challenge for CJ, too. You know, CJ had at least one or two throws that you know, were in a little bit of danger. You know, CJ's as good as anybody at not throwing picks. You're right. Yeah, this is going to be a whole lot of fun. Let's get to number three as we go through the Texans-Bears six-pack here. I wrote several cups of Joe in the notes. A dad joke right there. But Joe Mixon, will we see as much of Joe Mixon this week as we saw last week, 30 carries? Here was Bobby Slowick yesterday, asked if the week one workload that Joe Mixon had is sustainable.
Physically, I'd say he's probably one of the few guys remaining in the NFL that could handle that. I mean, there's not many offenses you're going to run the ball to the same guy 30 times over and over and over and over again every week. But I'm not really worried about his workload in that regard. Like, he's just built and has in his past done that before and is built to do that. But it really is more of, we'll give Joe the ball as many times as necessary, you know, and we'll give Nico the ball as many times as necessary, and we'll give Steph the ball as many times as necessary, and Tank, and like really all the way across the board. And every game's going to wind up playing out different. So, you know, in that game, it was a 30-carry game for Joe, and when you have 30 carries and you're averaging over four, in his case, five a carry, that's a heck of a day.
Yeah, you keep going. There's a hot hand element to it, to giving a guy the ball 30 times. Seth, I'm putting the over-under, the Sean Pendergast Sportsbook is putting the over-under this weekend at 19.5 carries. Not touches, because there's receptions involved too, but just carries. 19.5 carries for Joe Mixon. Over or under that number?
Boy, I'll say over. Yeah. So just
I'm fearful. A lot of the money's going to.
No,
come
you know
in
what?
On the
over. No, I'll take. I'm going to take the under on that.
Okay. Because
honestly, again, like the Bears play a lot of zone, and CJ's very good against zone. It doesn't mean non-aggressive or soft necessarily, just because it's zone, but. I think that they end up finding opportunities for CJ to carve up the Bears defensively.
Yeah.
And there'll be some risk there in throwing into some murky situations. But I think it'll be a little bit different this week. And CJ's going to be like very, very comfortable with his wide receivers and the adjustments they make.
For the people who wring their hands over, the receivers, the three receiver, Tank only touched the ball. You know, he only had three catches and he had an end around and a. Joe Mixon's not going to carry the ball 30 times a game. There's going to be snaps left over, to your point, I think you're making. So there's snaps. They're going to be snap. They're going to have about 65 or 70 plays every game, the Texans, because they're, you know, they're good offensively. Joe Mixon's not going to get, you know, 45% of those snaps touching the ball every game. Some of those are going to be Tank Dell receptions and Steph Diggs receptions and things like that. You know,
I think that if you had asked Slowick, Are you comfortable with Joe Mixon getting 500 carries in a season? You would have said, like, no.
it's the same version of the question that was asked, or a different version,
right,
I should say.
But it's like, and I think what Slog was saying, in any given game, yeah, they're cool with doing that. I mean, remember, this would go ahead. This happened with Arian Foster towards the end of his career. Was Arian would get like 200 carries in his first four games.
Yeah.
And Kubiak would say, like, well, we don't think that way. We just, you know, we're gonna run them. But it's just time and time again, you see over and over, like when a running back gets that much workload, they tend to suffer from it.
They bog down.
And I think if it were a few straight games of this, then they'd have to figure something out. They'd have to start using Dameon Pierce more, or Cam Akers more, or something like that. But if early in the season right now, I don't think it's a factor going into this game.
All right, let's get these last few in here. Number four, special teams. Last week, the Texans had a punt blocked that basically allowed a touchdown. They gave the Colts the ball at the 5-yard line. The Bears blocked a punt for a touchdown. Jonathan Owens, scoop and score after a blocked punt for the Bears. That was one of the reasons they won the game. They didn't score an offensive touchdown in their win over the Titans. I think that, to me, Seth, this is the only way the Bears hang around in this game is if they get some sort of fluky-ass play on special teams that gives them a short field or a bad pick that gives them a short field or a touchdown. Like, to win this game, the Bears are going to need something like that, like an out-of-character, outlier kind of play, I think, to hang in this game. You can't have what happened last week if you're Frank Ross happened this week with the Bears.
Yeah, and that's kind of like when I look at Caleb Williams last week, I think, all right, man, he airmailed some deep balls to guys that were wide open. Even though he's a rookie, I don't expect him to continue that. That's not his scouting report necessarily. Likewise, the Texans special teams, I don't expect them to all of a sudden start giving up a blocked punt or a kickoff return for a touchdown or what have you. Now, the Bears did some good things on special teams last week.
They did.
They're no slouches whatsoever. So if there was ever a wake up call needed and that you got away with it last week, I hope they really learn from that wake up call because the Bears are very capable of springing some big plays on special teams.
DeAndre Carter is their return specialist.
That's right.
Familiar face. Number five, and I know you like this one, Seth. We've been talking about Caleb Williams a lot this week, but just you got to confound poor bosom cuddling with his mom, Caleb Williams.
Last week it was after the loss, he said he was going to, or after the win, he said he was going to appreciate the win despite his own performance and go home and cuddle with his dog.
Mm.
So he's graduated to, I guess his surrogate mommy is now his dog that he can
Fido.
Go home and cuddle with.
Right? Yeah.
Which I'm guessing is just a Pomeranian or something like that. I don't know.
Crowd needs to be a factor. That's, I guess, what I'm saying here. Like the crowd, Caleb Williams, he had a bad game last week. That was in a pretty comfortable environment at Soldier Field. Like the crowd needs to be a factor in this game and really disrupt things for a guy in his second game as a rookie.
Yeah. Yeah, whether he needs coddling or not emotionally after the game, during the game, make it a nightmare to operate, to communicate. He and the wide receivers were on different pages a lot of times in that first game, and that was in the friendly confines of Soldier Field. So, yeah, just go ahead and everybody that's going to the game, just show up, be whichever chemical state you need to be at your max. Pace yourself, because they might need you in the fourth quarter. But, yeah, you are a factor in this game.
Yep. And the last one, I usually just do my prediction here. My prediction for this game, I think the Texans win by two touchdowns. I got Texans 30.
Two touchdowns?
Texans 30, Bears 16. Yeah, I do. I think the crowd's going to be into it. I think the atmosphere's going to be good. I think this is a team that and a quarterback and a head coach that type of environment fuels them. I think they love the spotlight. They love the primetime stuff. And I just think they're just better than the Bears. Like the big difference is I think the Texans are going to shore some things up defensively. They're not going to give up three huge 50 plus yard plays in this game. And I think Caleb Williams is a work in progress still.
I think this is the big thing. If you think about CJ's, where he made his big leap last year, where he first looked like, oh, wow, this might be something. It was at NRG Stadium in week two in the second, third, and fourth quarters of that game.
Yeah.
And that was a home environment. Very quiet because, as CJ noted, there were no fans in the stands. It's going to be opposite for Caleb Williams. He'll be at NRG Stadium in week two, but a completely different environment. I don't think this is the week that all of a sudden Caleb Williams looks like the guy that was drafted number one overall for a reason.
Yep, agreed. All right, let's get to headlines. We haven't talked about the Astros yet. We will in the next segment. They got a win yesterday. 4.5 up in the AL West. We'll get to some Texans injury news, some Bears injury news, and the latest on the Deshaun Watson situation. All coming up in headlines next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Called third Third strike, ball game over. Astros win a game in this series, 6-3. They snap a three-game losing streak. Big John came through huge today. The Astros scoring four in that eighth.
All right, that was Todd Callis on the call. The Astros get a 6-3 win yesterday over the A's. Good win, good team win yesterday, I would say, Seth. Framber Valdez was really good again. Unfortunately, Ryan Presley gave up a home run in the eighth inning to Rooker to tie the game at two. But the bottom of the eighth, this was cool to see, man. The bottom of the lineup getting it done for the Astros. The bottom four in the lineup, 6-9, all day long. Jason Hayward had his first home run as an Astro that gave the Astros a 2-0 lead. But it was the bottom of the eighth where they rallied for four runs, and all the runs were driven in by the bottom part. All six runs were driven in by the bottom four guys in the lineup yesterday. Here's Espada after the game on the bottom part of the order.
Yeah, the bottom of our lineup, you know. Jay got a big knock. Hayward, big two-run homer. Intentionally walk him to pitch with Dubon. Dubon finds a hole. You know, that's big. When we can stretch it out and get big hits from everyone, we find ourselves, you know, scoring some runs late in the game, and we got a little bit of cushion there. So that was the case today.
Good to see, man. Good team win by the Astros.
Yeah, no, good team win. And on it, like, look, you come out of that just dropping two to the A's, who have been a good team since June. But you're going to have these guys show up at various times. You can't depend on it necessarily. Presley giving up the home run was it's hard to get over emotionally anymore. Mm-hmm. And yet Abreu and Hader come in and do what they need to do. I mean, yeah. Hader gave up a run too, but this has got to, they got to be scrappy, man. They just, they flat out have to be scrappy as hell from now through October.
Yep.
It's just, there's no way around it. Kyle Tucker at some point can hopefully be a hero. Justin Verlander maybe comes back, but even with that, you've got these guys, like those guys who performed yesterday, they're going to be playing playoff baseball.
Absolutely, yeah. So the updates on the injuries, here was Joe Espada before the game on Jose Altuve, who did not play yesterday.
He's doing better. I thought he was going to come in and be more sore, you know, especially after the way he looked yesterday. But he's day-to-day. He's in the weight room. He's throwing the Met ball around, trying to get the area loose. So hopefully, you know, it's something that he won't miss a lot of time.
Okay, so we'll see tonight. I mean, you know, then Altuve has to jump on a plane and fly to L.A. last night. So we'll see if he starts tonight. It doesn't... So far, it doesn't sound serious, but every Astro injury comes with the warning label that they never make it sound serious.
I thought this is a good, ultimately, Sean, I feel optimistic that we're going to look at this as, okay, you know, silver lining was he got a little bit of a rest. He hasn't had many off days at all this year for a 34-year-old, and the rest of his body can rest while his oblique heals a little bit.
That's a good way to look at it. Here is Joe Espada before the game on Kyle Tucker getting back to playing the outfield again.
Hopefully he could be in there tomorrow, but in the outfield. So that work right there looked really good. So the goal is to have him in right field tomorrow.
And tomorrow, of course, is tonight against the Angels. So the Astros head to L.A., take on the Angels for three games. We're getting out to it, man. 16 games left to go in the season. 4.5-game lead over the Mariners, who lost yesterday to the Rangers. To the Texans we go. Injury news for Sunday's game. Dalton Schultz still out with an ankle injury, so this will be an interesting injury report today. I'm just based on missing two practices already. I don't feel optimistic about Dalton Schultz. We'll see. Nico Collins, Damian Pierce, Juice Scruggs all popped up as limited on the injury report yesterday. Collins with an illness, Damian Pierce hamstring, Juice Scruggs groin, all limited on the injury report yesterday. That was the first time they've popped up on the injury report. I think the big thing for this game, Seth, injury-wise, the big story for this game, two of the three wide receivers for the Bears triplets, their big three, both still out. Keenan Allen and Rome Odunze, both still out with injuries. Allen with a heel, Odunze with a knee. So they missed both practices this week. We'll see what happens today, but that's trending in a good direction for the Texans right now.
And normally you might say, well, okay, well, Keenan Allen, you know, they're probably good. He's at the age where they're going to give him some time off with any kind of an injury. But they were he was not on the same page as Caleb Williams at times in that game. Roma Dunze 100% was not on the same page at times. He ran routes like a rookie at points and did some things that just kind of drifted away from his spot and did some things that you can gush about wide receivers and their route running all you want. They're not NFL ready yet. So those guys not being out there at practice is actually a big deal at this point in the season with a rookie quarterback who didn't look in sync with his wide receivers. So yeah, good. Good. Yeah. I applaud them for being injured. Good job, Bears.
Way to go, Bears.
Yeah, you know, good. Ryan Poles, you're on your way to Ryan Poles being lauded as a brilliant GM one more year where you can just lose a bunch of games, get a high draft pick, ignore the fact that they could have drafted C.J. Stroud themselves, but Ryan Poles knows exactly what he's doing.
That's right. As far as NFL news goes, Thursday Night Football last night, the big story in the NFL today comes out of that game. 31-10, the final score. The Bills just decimate the Dolphins in Miami, but the big story there, Tua Tagovailoa leaves the game in the third quarter with a concussion. He was running, scrambling on a fourth down play, lowered his head into the chest of DeMar Hamlin, Bill's safety, and it's hard to tell if he got the concussion from the contact with Hamlin or the back of his head hitting the ground, but either way, Tua left the game, and he had the concussed look on his face. He down on the ground, his arms were doing the fencing motion, and when he was leaving the field, man, he had a glazed look on his face talking to some of his teammates. So who knows how serious? I don't know how serious this concussion is. I just know that concussions and Tua have become a very serious. They're already serious, but this is his third documented one now.
Honestly, if he had shown no visible signs, but you found out he had a concussion after the game, it was one of those late onset symptoms or whatever, it would still be a big, big deal. It doesn't like the severity of the collision or anything else doesn't matter at all when it's Tua who's had this history of concussions and just kind of traumatic injuries in general. Yeah. So. And the Dolphins as an organization got lambasted for the way they handled it 2 years ago. So this will be the number one story. And it's also time for a lot of grandstanding by TV personalities and everything where they'll make dramatic cases for what he should and shouldn't do. So I put the over-under on ESPN commentators who at least fake cry today at 1.5.
Okay.
There will be tearful or fake tearful statements and speeches today.
That's where I need to text somebody and find out who's on Get Up and First Take today. Like, who are the guest people? Do they have any ties to Tua or Alabama or Miami or anything? How about this, Seth? I just Googled it. Tua got his new contract this past offseason, $53 million a year. The $53 million a year is not the number that people are looking at now, probably this morning in Miami or anywhere. I just Googled it. His new contract carries more than $167 million in injury guarantees.
Right.
Injury guarantees. So Tua, if Tua chooses to walk away from football, he can walk away from football a very rich man.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's no... And I think if he chose to walk away because of his history of concussions, I don't think the Dolphins try to take that to arbitration or anything and say, well, he's choosing to walk away. I think it would be very easy to make the case that, like, no, he shouldn't play football again.
Yeah, this is where... Now, the actual money that they're scratching out to Tua, I'm guessing there's an insurance policy out there for stuff like this for teams.
I don't know his history.
You're right.
Yeah, Sean, those policies are expensive as hell.
It's
a lot. Yeah.
But I do wonder... Like, I wonder if there's any cap relief for that kind of thing. Like, the NBA has a clause like that, I think, where you do get, like, some... If it's a career-ending injury or some really bad injury, there's some degree of cap relief. If not, this is basically a Deshaun Watson situation for the Dolphins. You know what I mean? Like, it's...
Yeah, no, I would say that it's...
If you were to walk away, we shouldn't...
If you were to walk away, right. Now, if you walk away and you're healthy, then the team can recoup a bunch of it.
Correct.
And get salary cap relief that way. Like, they'll That's why retiring, if you don't have a career-ending injury, is like you've got to sometimes weigh like, okay, so I'm going to have to scratch a check for like 33% of my signing bonus. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to play another year.
Yeah,
I don't think this would be that situation. It would be dicey for the Dolphins financially.
Yeah. By the way, quick update, Deshaun Watson, Tony Busby yesterday in an email to ESPN, says that the Jane Doe that he is representing in the latest lawsuit against Deshaun Watson, they're attempting to meet with the NFL within the next 2 weeks. So she will talk to the NFL. Busby in the past has been very skittish about putting his clients in front of the NFL investigators. This particular Jane Doe is going to go in front of the NFL, it would appear. And according to Busby, he's got, quote, pertinent video and two additional witnesses for the NFL to speak with.
This is a tough one for the NFL because no matter what they do, they get blamed for, they get accused of handling it the wrong way. When they talk to the person, people say that they're trying to bully the person. When they don't, then they're not doing their due diligence. Yeah. So I personally think as long as they handle it the right way, that yes, the talk. But the, if I recall properly last time, Busby basically said that the NFL was harassing the clients when they spoke to some of the clients.
He's not a fan of the way the NFL goes about things.
Yeah.
Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. We talked about the Astros earlier in this segment. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Up next, another awesome article about C.J. Stroud. That in which we learned CJ has a side, it sounds like, man. He's got a side. We will talk about that. We'll hear from Bobby Slowick as well in the 7 o'clock hour, Texans OC, on what the Texans need to do better this week than last week, and can they keep handing the ball to Joe Mixon 30 times? We'll get to that coming up next.